Good afternoon. My name is Jim Atwood, and as president of the Harvard Law School Forum, I'd like to welcome you to this, our 10th program, fall 1983 season. I'd also like to point out this is a joint effort with the Harvard Jewish Law Students Association, and it's the first joint effort in my recent memory, but I think I speak for both organizations when I say I hope it's not the last. The format today allows for a question and answer period following Mr. Perez's remarks. At that time, we'll ask you to line up behind the microphones on the floor so that everyone can hear your questions. We'll take them in alternate order at that stage. And I should also mention to the press that we have set aside an additional 10 minutes or so after the question and answer period for you to ask questions by yourselves. And we'll take that right at the end. Now please welcome Yadin Kaufman, president of the Harvard Jewish Law Students Association, who will introduce this afternoon's most distinguished guest. Thank you.
Thank you. Before introducing today's speaker, I'd like to announce two dates on which the Harvard Jewish Law Students Association, this time not in cooperation with the forum, at least I don't think so, will present representatives from different points of the Israeli political spectrum. This Wednesday at 7:30 in Pound 204, Mr. Ira Rappaport of the West Bank settlement of Shiloh will speak. And Israel's ambassador to the United States, Mr. Meir Rosen, will speak here in the Ames courtroom on Wednesday, January 11th at noon. When a group invites a speaker to address it, it hopes that the speaker will be both authoritative and informative, and the event timely. The first time Mr. Shimon Peres was scheduled to speak here, our choice proved to be a bit too timely. That was back in September, when Mr. Peres was forced at the last minute to cancel his engagement after Prime Minister Menachem Begin resigned, and it appeared that Labor might be asked to form the next Israeli government. This time around, there doesn't appear to be an imminent governmental crisis brewing in Israel, but our speaker's visit is no less timely. Just last week, the Prime Minister and Defense Minister of Israel met with American leaders in Washington and apparently concluded agreements which could have far-reaching implications both for Israel and for the entire Middle East. And events to Israel's north in Beirut, as well as in Tripoli, continue to make daily headlines. In fact, we may even get the first labor reaction to the most recent events in Lebanon and the shooting down of two American planes early this morning. So we're fortunate to have Mr. Peres come back to Harvard, where he studied business administration some years ago, at a time when his views on the current Middle East predicament are especially important. And of course, there are few, if any, Israelis who can speak more authoritatively than can Mr. Peres about Israel's today and its tomorrow, the subject of Mr. Peres's remarks. During the last three decades, he has held the most sensitive governmental posts and has spent 25 years in the Knesset, Israel's parliament. He has served as Minister of Communications and Transport, Minister of Defense, and briefly in 1977 as Acting Prime Minister. Since 1977, Mr. Peres has been the leader of the Labor Alignment, which he narrowly missed leading into power in the 1981 elections. Today, Mr. Peres continues as the leader of a strong and active labor opposition to the Likud government headed by Yitzhak Shamir. Therefore, Mr. Peres's views on the current situation and his thoughts on likely future developments promise to be particularly insightful and relevant to the interested observer. It gives me great pleasure to introduce to you the head of Israel's Labor Party, Mr. Shimon Peres.
Thank you very much, Yadin. Dear friends, over the weekend, 10 young Americans, 8 Marines, and 2 pilots lost their life. It is obvious that the United States can do without Lebanon. But I am sure that peace and freedom in the world cannot prevail without the American participation. Whatever one may think or say, those young Americans were in the noble service of trying to achieve peace, enable the Lebanese government to regain their sovereignty and independence, and bring the country together again on its own. The situation in Lebanon is a very demanding and complicated one, and I believe that in order to deal with it, we have really to separate two different issues, the Lebanese issue and the Palestinian issue. As a matter of fact, Lebanon became a problem since the PLO established its own stronghold within the Lebanese life. Until 1976, neither Lebanon nor Israel did have much of a problem. And today, maybe, there is an opportunity to deal with the two issues, which are separated issues, separately. Then again, I do believe there is no solution to the Lebanese problem without a diplomatic effort. It should be a peaceful solution, not a military one, as there is no solution to the Palestinian problem, but again, via a peaceful effort. Neither terrorists nor military people can answer the need to solve the Palestinian problem in the right way. Right now, the relations between the United States and Israel are at a new height. I think there are several reasons for it. There is a feel probably that Moscow today is not as strong and active as it usually used to be. Apparently, Andropov did not assert his leadership among his own people and party. I do believe there is a sense of disappointment in the administration in Washington as a result of the Arab reaction when Reagan published his initiative. There was great hope that Jordan will take it and follow it. Nothing came out of the negotiations between the King of Jordan and the head of the PLO. I think Philip Habib negotiated in good faith with the Syrians. Again, it was a disappointing conclusion. The Egyptians are keeping themselves, for the time being at least, aloof. And the hopes that were attached to the Arab world did not yield any realistic fruit. Then again, whoever looks around on the friends of the United States, with the demonstrations in Europe, with the unquietness in Southern America, in South America, must admit that Israel, at least, is a reliable and serious friend, at least in the Middle East. Dependable, a country that has a stomach for her own defenses, and a country that has a wish to achieve peace. We too, in Israel, are cultivating a friendship to the United States, which one may describe as a national consensus. The need for a real friendship with America is not controversial in our country. It is labor and right, government and opposition, all walks of life, without hiding it, without complexities or apologies. I said already on a different occasion that Israel is probably the only country on earth which, in spite of the fact that America has helped her, she remained pro-American. And we value it. We were also very careful not to overstep this friendship. We were very careful not to ask for American troops to defend our country. We never wanted to create a situation where a single American mother may be worried because her boy is involved in an Israeli defense call. We understood also that it is to the interest of all of us, for the people who are seriously interested in peace, that the United States will maintain a strong posture, not only in Israel, but in the Arab world as well. We cannot have peace without the Arabs, as the Arabs cannot have peace without us, and there must be somebody to bring us together. The difference between the United States and Soviet Russia in the Middle East is that while America is proposing peace to all sides, the Russians, for the time being, are interested in a peace of the Middle East that they can achieve by supporting one side and not all sides at the same time. It is because of it that we are interested not only to reduce the military threat to Lebanon and to ourselves, a need that we cannot ignore nor deny. We are also very much interested in solving the outstanding, the burning problems diplomatically and peacefully. And I want to say a few words. Yadin said I shall speak about Israel today and tomorrow. Today and tomorrow, the most burning issue is to bring peace to the area. It shouldn't be postponed. It is a need for the Arabs as for us. It's not a matter of a negotiation between two charity organizations. War is a real danger to all children and all people. And the more the countries are acquiring modern technology, the greater the danger becomes, the more immediate the need of a settlement is with us. In Lebanon, I believe we are facing three different problems. One is the Syrian occupation. There was a hope that if Israel will begin her withdrawal, the Syrians will follow suit. They didn't do it. The second is the establishment of an all-Lebanese government, namely a government that will represent all of the Lebanese people and will control all of the Lebanon territory. And the third point is how to secure the northern front of Israel so no repeated threat to the security of our people in the Galilee will come again. For the time being, I believe, the first thing that all of us have to do is to contain the Syrians. I'm not so sure that they are going to withdraw. And furthermore, I'm not so convinced that we can achieve something serious out of the negotiations which took place between the Syrians and American representatives. Because if the Syrians will get what they have, they will not withdraw. If they will get more than they have, they will in fact control Lebanon. And what is the sense to make Syria the patron or the country that will boss the Lebanese affairs? And Lebanon, which will be dependent upon Syria, will never have peace within herself and will never offer peace to her neighbors. It so happened that only an independent Lebanon can suggest a new ray of hope for the Lebanese people and reduce the dangers that were accumulated on her soil. Under those circumstances, I believe the best policy toward Syria is a policy of containment. To tell the Syrians and their forces not to advance further in Lebanon, stay where they are, and not to try to impose by military means their own wishes and plans. The second point, I believe, is the need to impress the Jamal government to make a prompt decision about the nature of his government and the span of its control. Unfortunately, there is a contradiction between the Lebanese constitution that was written 40 years ago and back in 1942, and when the constitution was written, the Christians were a majority in Lebanon, and the present situation in which the Christians lost their majority. They are no longer a majority in their own country. This contradiction cannot be solved by military means, nor by the presence of a foreign military force. The Christians, excuse me, the Christians can make a choice, either to have a partition and give back part of the land that they have gained in the Sykes-Picot Agreement back in 1920, in other words, to have less land and more Christians, instead of having more land without a Christian majority, or, alternatively, a coalition that will represent rightly all the existing forces and their proportions as they are today in Lebanon. To the best of my knowledge, there is no Lebanese leader that advocates a partition. If they want to have a coalition, they must assemble all parties, all groups, all different religious and ethnic components and make a national government. They shouldn't postpone it. And the third is the Israeli presence in Lebanon. The sole reason for us being there is the security of Israel. We do not seek a piece of land, nor a part of a river, nor a role in the Lebanese destinies. What we want really is just to secure our own country. I got a cold in your city. I believe the best policy for Israel today is to take two parallel steps unilaterally. One is to realize the Lebanese-Israeli agreement, which provides Israel with the necessary measures for the defense of our country. And the second is to separate the dates of our withdrawal from the Syrian possible or maybe impossible withdrawal. After coordinating with the United States, we have to set dates once we shall have the right to guarantee the frontier of Israel. If these three steps will be taken, I do believe that there will be a real opening for a peaceful and diplomatic solution of the complex problem in Lebanon. And then we have to turn to the Palestinian problem. I do believe there is a Palestinian problem. I do believe there is a need to solve it. I think the only way to solve it is by negotiations. I think it should be solved in a fair manner to the Palestinians and ourselves, to overbridge the contradiction in between the Palestinian aspiration and the security call of Israel, and to build a different future. We have, again, several different questions inherent in that problem. Question number one, with whom to negotiate? Experience has shown that the PLO and its leader have never been, nor can they become, a partner, a serious partner for negotiations. Arafat could have taken the political options which were before him, but he has rejected them. He tried his hands in the way of military action, terror. He failed. He tried to keep his organization together unsuccessfully. He wanted to assert his leadership over the organization, and he faced a rebellion from within its own ranks. Their wealth, in spite of the declared support, left him alone and isolated under the most crucial conditions from his point of view. He was alone in Beirut, he remained alone in Tripoli, and but for the cables of congratulations and good wishes, nobody lifted a finger to save him from his own complicated situation. I do believe that the real partners to negotiate meaningful, serious, are the Jordanians and their king on one hand, and the representatives of the Palestinian people who reside on the West Bank and Gaza on the other hand. We cannot solve the Palestinian problem without paying attention to the security needs of Israel. And because of the narrowness of Israel, geographically, in fact, we need at least two or three frontiers, a strategic one and a national one. Very much like many other modern countries, the strategic frontier today of the United States is Western Germany. The United States has even an army in Western Germany or in Europe. And then you have your national frontier. We would seek a solution upon which the Israeli security will begin from the Jordan River without us controlling the lives of the 1.3 million Arabs who reside on the West Bank and Gaza. We cannot support the establishment of a separated Palestinian state because a Palestinian state means a Palestinian army. And we cannot agree that the Palestinian army will be stationed in the gates of Jerusalem, 100 yards from our parliament, or in the heart of the mainland of Israel. I do believe that in an agreement which will comprise the Jordanians, the West Bankers, and Israel, which will keep the West Bank demilitarized, the Israeli army and settlements along the Jordan River, and the administration and citizenship of the West Bankers and Gaza becoming Jordanian will be the best. But then I'm coming to the next question. I do not believe that this is the time, the right time, to decide on the permanent settlement. What is a real need, and immediately, is to create an opening position, to prepare the grounds so all parties will come together and try to negotiate an agreement. There is no chance for an agreement without negotiations or instead of negotiations. An agreement will follow the negotiation, it will never precede it. We have to have what Dr. Kissinger from time to time calls a constructive ambiguity, which will enable all parties to come together. We feel that in order to make an opening position attractive, and I'm asking myself not what should the Arabs do, but what should we, the Israelis, do, a package made of 4 points. A, to suggest to the Jordanians to come and negotiate without any preconditions. They can bring with them any offers, demands, or suggestions they have in their minds, and everything will be negotiated. Secondly, to tell the Jordanians that we are ready to negotiate on the basis of 242 and 338, which they have already accepted in the past. Three, that we are ready to negotiate, bearing in mind the Reagan Initiative. I distinguish between the Reagan Initiative and the Reagan Plan. I know that neither the Jordanians nor ourselves are happy with the Reagan Plan. But the Reagan Initiative is an attempt to collect all the conflicting parties and bring them together in order to negotiate a solution. And we are ready to do this as well. And finally, reopen the negotiations on autonomy without feeling committed to the model which was adopted by the previous government. I believe it is time and a good season for all the parties to come together. What happened to the PLO and Arafat, the attempt of the Syrians to take over the PLO, the worry that that has created in the eyes of the Jordanians, the renewal of an arms race, the height of the tension, the dissolutions on wars, makes this time an opportune occasion to try and negotiate seriously. I would like to conclude my remarks by saying, I am not a peacenik. I do not believe that a nation can be naive. God forbid if Israel would be a feeble country, if we wouldn't have an army to defend ourselves. God forbid if we would depend upon the forces of other nations to defend us. We had to, we can, and we must maintain our military posture. But the real hope is in a peaceful solution, in a political one. In wars, you have to win. Peace, you can achieve by compromises. We, on our part, are ready to announce our readiness to compromise, territorially and otherwise, in order to make peace a promising reality for the future. I would warn everybody not to approach the problems in a simplistic mind, but then not to give up hope. A year before Sadat came to Israel, very few people believed that this may happen, yet it did happen. And what happened once constructively may happen again in the future. And this is our hope and prayer. Thank you.
We now have some time for questions. At this stage, I would like to point out and emphasize if you could make your questions brief, concise, and to the point. Thank you. Why don't we begin over here?
Mr. Perez, you seem to be, shall we say, constructively ambiguous about your proposals for peace in Lebanon. You seem to imply that Israel should pull out before Syria does, and yet that we should try, along with the United States, to contain Syrian goals in Syria. How do you propose to get the Syrians out after you pull out of Lebanon?
Today, the Israeli presence is linked twice with the Syrian one. Once that the Syrians have to approve the agreement between Lebanon and ourselves, and the other that Israel will withdraw only when and together the Syrians will do so. I suggest to unlink both conditions. We don't need the Syrian approval in order to realize, to implement the agreement between us and the Lebanese, and then we don't have to wait forever for the Syrians to move. Now, I don't suggest that only the United States will contain Syria. As a matter of fact, back in 1976, we have had on an unwritten map red lines. The Syrians were told, those are the red lines, you will better not move. And I must say the Syrians respected it. I do not suggest that this will be just an American saying. Now, the strength of the Israeli army does not depend upon its proxy to hostile positions, but upon its mobility. And the statement may be sufficient. Then I do not suggest that Israel will withdraw without a complete coordination with the United States forces. Though each of us is acting on its own, there is an undeniable link in the eyes of the people. So say that the American forces will not remain alone, or our forces will not remain alone. I know there is an American date and there is the Israeli date. The dates should be coordinated, if not the actions or the forces. And in my judgment, it can be coordinated. To make myself clear, when I say an American date, I mean the American date is actually the establishment of a real, all Lebanese government. This is the American date. The United States participated in many wars. I can't recall a single occasion where the American army remained in the wake of a victory. You helped people to regain liberty and then went back home. So the American date is a Lebanese government. The Israeli date is the Israeli security. And if actions will be taken simultaneously, there is no need for a contradiction between the two targets and two dates.
Can I ask a follow-up, or is that?
I think we have to keep them short. Thank you.
Although, in a way, this is a follow-up. Your position seems to be that there should be no linkage between Israeli withdrawal and Syrian withdrawal, partially because of the mobility of the Israelis. That is, even if the Israelis do not occupy fixed positions deep in Lebanon, they always have the means to cross the border again. But what I'm asking is this: when you talk about a political solution as opposed to the military solution to the problems there, it seems that the building and support of a decent, moderate government in Lebanon, a compromise government, requires precisely military support to keep the Syrians at bay. And if even if you say there is the threat that the Israelis will come across the border to keep the Syrians within boundaries, it seems you then run up against interior political problems within Israel. Do you think if you were prime minister that you would have trouble with the wing of your own party that would essentially say, Yesh Gvul, there is a border, we don't care if there's a greater Syria above the border?
No, I don't think so. You see, we practiced it in the past. And I do not believe that the Syrians can really move freely all over the places. If you will seriously have a Lebanese government, and the Lebanese government will request the Syrian withdrawal, and I think it is for them to ask it, I wonder if the Syrians can remain for a very long period. Now, the problem of the Syrian presence in the eyes of the Israelis becomes very apparent when, say, they will shoot at our planes, as they did shoot at the planes of the United States. There was again an unwritten law that planes have the right to overfly the Lebanese soil. I mean, there are many arrangements, written or unwritten, that the Syrians have to respect. And they will respect, because they are not the only power in the area. But I do not anticipate internal problems if this will be the policy. By the way, I do not believe that there will be a need for a military move. I don't suggest it. I think if the Syrians will be told clearly, there won't be a need for a military operation.
Mr. Peres, I felt that your comments were, your approach to peace was a bold approach, and I admire your hope and optimism. I have two concerns about your proposal, though. First of all, when you talk about West Bank Palestinian leaders stepping forward, it doesn't seem to me that just as the Arab world would not step in to support Mr. Arafat, the Arab world is not going to step in to give them the support that they would need from the Arab world to be able to step forward. And my second concern is, something I'm unsure about is whether when you talk about territorial compromise, you're also considering the Golan Heights.
Well, on your first question, the fact is that the king has negotiated with Arafat until a couple of months ago. They have reached an agreement. Arafat initialed it. And then he was forced to back out on the agreement that he has signed, which shows that at least theoretically, Hussein is ready to come to negotiate and Palestinians are ready to support him. I don't know what the Arab world is today, but most, actually all, of the West Bankers are Jordanian citizens. There is no contradiction between them and Jordan, at least not from a legitimate point of view. And they can form a joint delegation which will represent the Jordanians and the Palestinians on the West Bank and come to negotiate. From what I know, that if Jordan will decide to come in, she will be supported by several Arab countries who already declared themselves in favor of it, like, for example, Egypt, Sudan, some North African countries, maybe Saudi Arabia as well. So the Jordanians will not be alone. I do not feel that the Arab world is seriously interested in making the PLO an inter-Arab instrument in the hands of the Syrians, nor do they share the Syrian view that Palestine is part and parcel of Syria. So very much because of this development, that there is a fair chance, in my judgment, that Jordan may come in with support of the Arab world and that the Palestinians may join in, together with the Jordanians, to negotiate.
Could you answer the part about the Golan Heights?
The Golan Heights, for the time being, is an academic question. There is nobody in Syria that wants to negotiate. And I don't want to go into any theoretic questions.
Mr. Perez, I have a question regarding Labor's chances in the next elections. What measures has the Labor alignment taken to improve its image among the Sephardic Jewish electorate?
Well, we have mobilized the help of the Likud party. And they are doing a nice job. I do not believe, frankly, that there is a division, as I read in the American press and in the Israeli press as well, between the Oriental Jews and the Western Jews. I think, if at all, the division is more on economic lines than on ethnic. The fact is that we just had a municipal election, and Labor did exceedingly well. The support, shall I say, in places where there is a high concentration of Jewish people coming from North Africa was very much increased in favor of Labor. We almost doubled it. There are some major cities that changed hands from Likud to us, again, where the Oriental Jews are a majority. And the polls, too, are very encouraging for Labor. I do believe that the political issues that I have described are no win issues from an electoral point of view. I don't believe so. The nation is more or less divided half and half. What will decide the elections is more the economic situation. And the Likud did so poorly in the economy that our chances were really enhanced very seriously, and I'm very hopeful.
Mr. Perez. In reference to your ideas about settling sometime in the future the Palestinian question in the West Bank, as far as I understand it, you suggest setting up a civil self-government for the Palestinians in the West Bank while maintaining a military presence. Now, I'm assuming that the members of the Israeli Jewish settlements in the West Bank will retain their Israeli citizenship under such a plan. My question is, wouldn't the situation in places where there are conflicts between the Israeli settlers and the Palestinians, for example in Hebron, if the Palestinians had their own civil government while the Israelis remained under Israeli government, wouldn't these situations get worse?
No, I don't think so. As there are Arab settlements under non-Arab rule, can be the other way around. Look, the meaning of peace is peace. It is not the continuation of belligerency and fighting and war. But just to correct what you have said, I suggest actually a Jordanian-Palestinian framework which will control all of the Jordanians and the Palestinians that reside either in Jordan or on the West Bank and Gaza. They will not be dependent upon us in their husbandry of their own affairs. In the West Bank today, there are not more than 30,000 Jewish settlers. Some of them, maybe half of them, are in the so-called security zones, which we intend to keep for ourselves in the future. And which was recognized, in fact, in the Camp David Agreement, by mentioning specified locations needed for the security of Israel. I do believe that in a peaceful situation, Jewish people will be able to live everywhere and move around, as the Arabs will be free to move around. I mean, after all, the difference between peace and war is peaceful relations. And that's what may happen, in my judgment.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Perez, your fourth point that you made was that you propose a model of autonomy that is different from the one currently espoused by the Likud government. But from your remarks here today, you seem to be emphasizing a similar plan involving autonomy for the people and not the land, even though it is under some sort of Jordanian federation. Can you please be more explicit about the labor position?
No, I didn't say it. I didn't suggest any divorce between land and people. I said that the land, not all of the West Bank, we are not going to return to the 67 frontiers, but most of the land upon which most of the Palestinians reside will not be controlled by us. We are not suggesting a Chagall sort of a painting.
And what would be the status of Jewish settlers currently living in Yehuda Shomron and the status of ones who would like to live there in the future?
They will be Israeli citizens. And if they will be under Arab-controlled areas, they will be Israeli citizens who live under Arab-controlled areas. Why is it so hard to imagine? The first to suggest it, by the way, was the Likud government, because they have suggested that the settlements in the Rafiah area, immediately after the negotiations with Egypt, will remain under Egyptian control. The Egyptians refused, not us.
Mr. Perez, you cited the demonstrations in Europe and the unrest in Central and South America as disturbing signs. Did you mean by this that perhaps that you supported or that you do support the Euro missiles and you don't think they should be protested against in Europe, and that you view this as a disquieting sign? Or?
Well, basically, I'm a provincial guy, and I wouldn't like really to advise to the Europeans what to do. But may I say the following? I don't limit it to the missiles. It is a decision for each country to decide. So, to be honest, I have much admiration for President Mitterrand that has shown character. Because if you want to live under the American umbrella, you must help to hold it. And I don't know any European country, or at least many of them, who would give it up. But what worries me in Europe is not the limited problem of the cruise missiles, but a tendency to become neutral in face of the Russian thrust. I, as a human being and as a Jewish person, I'm terribly worried about neutrality. I hope when the Messiah will come, all of us will become neutral. But until then, when you have aggressive forces, you must be ready to face them. And that's what worries me. I mean, I'm doubly worried. You can't say I want an American umbrella and then to demonstrate against it, and then to say something that I surely would reject, better red than dead. I would say, better alive and be free. Why red and dead?
Well, then, I think we will finish off this afternoon. As I mentioned, those of you in the press will be back in a few minutes to answer some specific questions. Thank you very much.